Podcast Studios is the home of Head Stuff Podcasts. It's where lots of our shows are recorded and where we work on production, promotion, video, live shows, and lots more. In our studios here in Dublin City Centre, we work with everyone from international brands to government organisations, charities to arts groups, entrepreneurs to hobbyists. So if you'd like us to help tell your story in a creative, professional and engaging way, you can find out more at thepodcaststudios.ie.
Hey guys, and welcome to Personality Bingo with me, your host, Tom Moran. So this week on the podcast, we have the phenomenal Killian Coyle. Killian is an actor and a producer whose work you'll know from right across the stage, the screen, and behind the scenes in the production end of things, which is actually where I want to start because he's at the helm of a new play by Kira Elizabeth Smith. It's called We Can't Have Monkeys in the House, and it is at the New Theatre running from November 13th to November 24th. Although I felt that could have started on November 12th. But you're going to see all that on the website anyway. Go and check it out. Look, Kira's work is unbelievable. She's a guest on this podcast. If you haven't listened to that, go back. It might be back over a year at this point. But it's an amazing episode. Go and have a listen. The cast is absolutely phenomenal. It's Meg Healy. It's Danielle Galligan. It's Camille Lucy Ross. And it's Aisling O'Mara. They're all phenomenal performers who I've been lucky enough to work with in some capacity or another with every single one of them, which is obviously a real privilege because, as I said, they just all are brilliant at what they do. The play kicks off at 7:30, as I said, in Temple Bar's new theatre, and I couldn't recommend any more. I am definitely going to be in it, and I urge you to do the same. As an actor, Killian is really, really phenomenal at what he does. I've seen him do it. I've got to audition with him a couple of times, which is actually a real joy because he's brilliant at what he does, and it's amazing always to see him on stage doing what he's meant to be doing. He's on screen, which I just saw recently in the brilliant Rosie by Roddy Doyle. He's just done some work on Fair City, as well as that on stage. The Spinning Heart, which the success was unbelievable. That's by the phenomenal Donal Ryan. And as well as that, that's been back for so many runs in Smock Alley, obviously. And then they hit the Gaiety Theatre, which was such a success. It was kind of amazing and inspiring, really, to see, people like my own age just doing stuff on that scale. Especially as Killian was a producer in that one as well, with the brilliant Reality Check, which he is obviously such a part of. He's also done The Boys, which just finished up recently at the Viking in Clontarf. And yeah, look, I could go on for hours about his work, but you're going to hear over the course of this chat, he's a super engaging guy. We get on really well, and it was really nice to have him on the podcast. So Killian, if you are listening, thank you so much for taking the time to do it. In other news, as you're listening to this, I am probably away in the west of Ireland wearing tracksuit bottoms and no deodorant, because that's kind of what I needed, just getting to get out of the city for a little while. Really, I had a couple of weeks off and I'm just embracing that, but don't worry, I have loads of podcasts in the can, some amazing ones actually that I'm really, really excited to release, including an amazing episode with the brilliant Justine Stafford from Joe.ie. You'll also know her from her comedy sketches, from her memes, from her t-shirts. She's just an absolute gem of a human being. Another Meath person, which is always good to get on the podcast, and it's a really amazing chat. Like, we just get into it across the board. We have an amazing chat about eating disorders and body image and all that sort of stuff, because it's something that Justine's experienced, and she's talked about it very openly in her comedy, and with a real lightheartedness and openness and vulnerability that I think is just pure infectious. So I'm really excited to share that one with you too. But look, there's an amazing episode here before we get ahead of ourselves, so please enjoy the fantastic Killian Coyle. But it's real funny, I always try to think of a different, is that an adverb, is that what that is, like a different word anyway to describe the guest. I don't know if I've ever used fantastic before, but he is fantastic. It's Killian Coyle playing Personality Bingo with Tom Moran.
Tom Moran's Personality Bingo.
Killian Coyle, ready to play personality bingo?
Yo!
Oh, Jesus Christ. All right, here we go. So a quick explanation of how it all works. I've got 60 minutes on the clock, 60 balls in here, and 60... Yeah, there is a real clock.
Oh my God, there is.
It's a digital clock.
Very yeah. Nice. And we usen't to...
Sorry, not digital. It's actually on a monitor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we used to have one, and I used to have to look at my phone, which was just, and I'd have to remember the time we started, and it just all, because when you look at a phone and these things, in fact, I don't even like the way my phone's on the table. It just feels.
I just love the way you just chucked that on the floor.
I did, yeah. I mean, there's a lovely shaggy carpet there.
Nice.
And yeah, so I've got these 60 corresponding questions. I've also given you 5 numbers on that sheet of paper. Would you do me a favor and read out the 5?
19, 3, 54, 14, and 29.
Excellent. Do me another favor and pick a 6, something between 1 and 60 that's not already there.
Okay, number 41, sure, that's not, no 40s there, yeah.
Nice, any reason you've gone for it?
That is my home address number, and that is all you're getting of my home address.
Yeah, that was the follow-up question.
Could you give us the rest of that, please?
Yeah, you're going to have to open
Could
up
Could you give us a consonant, please, Carol? And a vowel, please.
And I should say that if all 6 of those numbers do come up, that means the tables are turned and you get to ask me any question in the whole wide world. I'll give you a totally honest answer.
Oh, yes, I already know my question.
Oh, Jesus. How do you know? That's impressive.
I really hope I get this.
This has been obviously burning with you for a long time. All right, let's just get right in there. Give it a spin.
Okay, I'm nervous.
Oh. Jesus.
Oh, nothing's coming out. Okay, we're done here. Thanks very much, Tom. Actually, nothing is coming.
There we go. Oh, yes. Just takes a minute to warm up sometimes, you know. Like ourselves. Here we go. Number 44. Do you have it?
No, I have 41.
No worries. Oh, we're going right in there. Number 44. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh, my God. Know when to say sorry. Mm. And know when to own your mistakes, I suppose. Never be too stubborn. Or non-humble, if that's... what's the other... Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's just like... Yeah, I suppose. And never to be too stuck in your ways. You know, always try and remain, you know, open to changes and as fluid as possible, I suppose. You don't be cemented in your way of thinking or your way of being or your way of doing something, I suppose. Try and always be fluid, I suppose.
Was there someone that gave you that kind of portion of advice? Really like
I actually
it.
Can't remember who gave me that advice. It's always just who gave me that advice. I don't know. I don't know who gave me that advice. It's always just something stuck with me. Maybe it was someone in Gaiety, one of the lecturers in Gaiety when we were or maybe it was one of my teachers. I'd say it was one of my teachers, probably in school or something. I really don't know right now. But
do you like advice, or would you consider yourself quite a strong-headed, like sure of yourself person?
I'm pretty strong-headed and sure of myself, and I'm sure that's the reason why that person gave me that piece of advice. I'm pretty strong-headed, and I have a good amount of self-belief in my abilities. So if I go for something, I just just go for it. You know, and I do it, and I believe that I can do the thing. Maybe to my detriment in some aspects, I don't know. But I just kind of dive in and get the thing done. But there are other ways of doing things, I suppose.
Do you find it hard to say sorry in those moments when you are wrong?
I did. I found it when I was growing up. I found it was really hard to say sorry. Like saying sorry was like just my whole body would just go. Ugh. You know, it's just one of those things. Like I've gotten. I hope I've gotten better at it. I think it's a very important thing to know when you're in the wrong and to. Own up for your mistakes, and that's how we learn, you know. I guess what we both do is all about making mistakes, fail again, learn from that fail, move on, pick yourself back up, fail, you know, drop to the floor, pick yourself back up again, you know, that's the whole game. And I think maybe getting into this game of acting and producing and having to learn along the way and make all the mistakes and learn from those mistakes, it's become a lot more easier for me to go, oh, yeah, I fucked up there. Yeah, sorry. That was dumb. Okay, that's wrong. I won't do that again when I go to the next thing or when you know. Anyway, that's a lot of waffle.
No, it's not. It's interesting. So, you know that self-belief that you talked about and that ability to just kind of dive in and believe if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right, you're going to do it as well as anyone else. Where do you think that comes from? Is that something you've always had or is it something you learned?
No, God, no. I think... I don't know where that's come from, to be honest. I think it's just from, yeah. I don't know. I think it's out of necessity, almost, that she, you know, it's kind of a do or die attitude I have. If like, there's no two options about it. There's no such thing as it's, you can't do it or it's not going to happen. You're going to do it and it's going to happen. Or you're going to die. Or, you know, there's no two options. So I guess putting myself, I don't know, mentally, I just kind of try and, what's the point in not being sure of your abilities, you know, or you know, you're 27 years on the planet, you have a wealth of experience in those 27 years of living, and yes, it's only a blip, really, we're still, you know, young, but I think you have to have the rest of the ill feelings and the negative feelings will only slow you down, if you know what I mean, and get in the way. Obviously, too much of the pendulum swing into the other realm can make you an kind of an arrogant ass whole thing. We can't swear. I love it. Yeah. So does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. No, it's very interesting because, like, I think, yeah, it's very interesting about, I think, people, even you see it with people, for example, right? It's such an obvious example, but someone like Conor McGregor, actually, I'm annoyed at myself for bringing up this as an example, but
well, that's
now.
When the pendulum swings in the other way, and that's where also personality, that's an act, you know, there right. is, he's a showman, he's an excellent showman. That is, but that's exactly the pendulum swinging the other way. But that's that persona lends itself to that world, if you know what I mean.
Totally, because I mean, the times when he's most admirable to me are the times when he wins or the times when he loses. Because in both instances, he's actually he comes across certainly as very humble.
He pushed the boat a bit too much in the last, you know, the last fight with all the build up there. You know,
yeah, it's in the build up.
Yeah, you know, getting personal with people and about their religion and about their parents and about their country. And I think all that's low blow stuff, but you know, it that world is aggressive. It's full of testosterone. It's huge. It's big. It's chest out. It's proud. It's so that he is. You know, he lends itself to that. You couldn't have a Conor McGregor walking into a rehearsal room for, you know, the Abbey. You know, you'd just be like, well, could you though? Actually, you probably have at some stage.
I'm sure.
You definitely have. What am I saying? Come on. Is there a bollocks button here that we can press? Bollocks. Like, no, there probably has.
Let's make that a thing.
Yeah, can we? Yeah, because I say stuff and then I want to just go, bullshit, bollocks.
Oh, we can make that a rule for this episode. If I say something you think is bollocks or vice versa,
we can hit the button and go, bollocks.
We can just interrupt each other.
Yeah, yeah, great. And if I say something stupid, I want to go back on it, we'll just say bollocks and I'll go back.
Yeah, excellent.
Unreal. Okay.
I love this.
That's a new rule.
All right, sweet. Let's give it a roll.
Okay, do it.
All right. Here we go. Number 34. Do you have it?
No.
No worries. Number
we're
going
to have to go through these quicker, man, because I want to get these six numbers. All right. We're at 10 minutes already. What are you doing?
Okay.
Two balls done. Let's speed this up.
Fucking let me talk and
sorry,
I will,
sorry,
you prick.
Sorry, sorry,
number 34.
Bollocks.
Do you cry often?
No. I don't. I wish I did more. No, I don't. No, I don't. I really don't. I don't cry often at all. I feel a lot. I'm huge. Like, but I don't cry. I'm not a big crier.
Mm.
I cry at funerals. Funerals are the one thing that will set me off. They're the only thing that will really, really set me off. Death is something that is so final. And so it's just heartbreaking. I just think it's a really, really hard thing to go through. Especially, you know, being there afterwards and seeing the aftermath of all that and the church or whatever. Not the church, but even the I went to a humanist ceremony there and was just absolutely stunning. And it's the only way I want to go now because it was so much. It was, instead of it being about 80% about God or religion and 20% about the individual, it was 90% about the individual and 10% about, you know, living and life. Or, you know, it was all focused on the person and what they meant to people. And people came up and spoke. And that just really gets me going. Yeah, not gets me off, that's the wrong bollocks. Sorry, it really upsets me. So that's one thing that would make me cry.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking about this with someone recently, and it was like the age where you become aware of like death. I don't know if you had this, but it was that thing of like when I was a kid and I realized that for example, my parents like were gonna die someday.
Yeah.
Like I'm very lucky. Both my parents are still alive, but I really vividly remember going to bed every night and like really being very conscious about the last like three or four words I said to them in case they weren't to wake up again.
Yeah.
Like so that the fact that like death is one of the few things that will like provoke tears for you, apart from obviously the finality of it, and it's something that is universal across the world. Is there like a specific personal thing that you think that that's why it resonates so strongly with you?
No, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think it's anything in particular. Like, I'm lucky enough, again, to have both my parents, to have my inner circle of family. I've never had to lose someone close to me. Mm. I've never lost an aunt, an uncle. I haven't been alive or old enough to understand the loss of a grandparent. I still have my granny. She's been, you know, I lost two grandparents when I was not born and one when I was like 6 months. So I haven't gone through any death of people close to me.
Yeah.
But I have gone through the death of people close to me, people close to them, if you know what I mean, someone very like parents of friends,
sure.
And having to see them go through that, you know, that's a huge, I guess that's a huge wake up call, and maybe that triggered something as well. I just think there's nothing like it, you know. It's I also, yeah, I don't know, I get very get a bit philosophical about the whole thing. I'm mad into like the purpose of all this and space.
Yeah,
and
I'd love to talk
space
about it.
And yeah, man, I love space documentaries. I just love learning about the universe and the scale of it, and you know, the probability of us being here and being at the stage that we are, and the prospect of what else is out there and how far along they are, and you know, and also it's baffling to think about how infinitesimally small our everything that makes us is contained in our skull. That's everything we feel, everything we know, everything we understand, everything we've ever loved or ever will love, everything that makes us is contained in this tiny thing in our skull. And if you were to size that up to the scale of Earth, you know, or even the scale of Ireland, and then the scale of Earth, and then the scale of the sun, and then the scale of the, you know, it, we are so tiny. And it's just, I love reflecting on, like, when, I suppose, when, you know, you get, when issues are happening here, it's like, you know, it's just, it seems a bit, it's inconsequential, if you know what I mean. It makes it feel a bit inconsequential.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And to go back to a little bit, the last question we were...
The death thing, or, we, you know, that ties into death, because I'm like, we can't even comprehend the universe around us fully. So what is to say, what is to say there isn't something after death? Or, what, I'm not a religious person, but I do think that our brains are too small to understand what could happen after or what's happened before. All we can go is, oh, we were a singularity and that exploded into the universe and it keeps spreading out. And, you know, but then what is it after that? Do you get what I mean? It's a bit bleak to think it's just nothing, you know?
But yeah, and when, with the bleakness of it, then say those moments you were talking about, like, you know, you were talking about, like, say, just life in general, and those moments where you are on the floor and then you're like, no, I'm going to go again. Like, is that something, do you find how small you are a comfort, or does that frighten you?
You lose it every now and again. You don't think about it in day-to-day life at all. It's just sometimes when I just reflect or watch a ridiculous documentary on space or something, it just reminds you kind of like, Jesus, like, there he is, something huge. I went to India once, and that's probably what triggered it off. I went to India when I was 16, and I was climbing in the Himalayas, and there's no natural light for hundreds and hundreds of miles when you're up there. So there's nothing, when the night sky comes out, when you're up, you know, thousands of feet, the atmosphere is thin, there's no natural light. There is more stars in the sky than there is blackness. Do you know what I mean? And you look out there and it's like, each one of those is a star, each one of those has a solar system with planets rotating around it. And, you know, it's just like, yeah. Anyway, we're getting rambling here now.
Yeah, no,
bollocks,
that's all right. You're right. Let's give it a spin.
Let's give it a spin.
No, it's good, man. Don't worry. If it gets bollocks, I'll move you on. It's good. It's interesting. I'm interested. All right, here we go. Number 20. Do you have it?
No, 29. 19. No.
All right. No. Number 20. What do you think the biggest misconception is about being an actor? And maybe a producer, because you do both.
The biggest misconception about being an actor is... I always find it funny. I've heard people... you know, who are in their mid-20s, just like, oh, I'm going to give the acting a go. I feel people, like, I think people underestimate the amount of graft and years of, you know, crap that goes into trying. You know, I sometimes people just go, yeah, I'm gonna do the acting now. And you know, it's like would you turn around to me and go, yeah, I'm gonna do the medical thing now, or yeah, I'm gonna do the space engineering now, or like, and you know, acting isn't they're very different things, but I'm like, I feel sometimes people just underestimate. They think it's just like a little hobby that we all go out and, you know, we play in a room and we pretend, and it's like, yeah, sometimes that really grinds my gears. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. No, it's interesting. Like, because it is one of them things, because, like, on one hand, you're completely right. And then on the other hand, like, you know, it's funny. I literally just came from Bow Street. They were doing, like, a week of, like, workshops, right? So I was in with a session with Maureen Hughes, and she was talking about the way she cast stuff. And she was saying, like, and I agree with you, because it grinds my gears to a point as well. But then you're like, she was talking about her casting process, whatever anyone makes it at, but she was saying that, like, I think she was talking about love-hate. Now, whether this is, when she said this in the room, I was kind of like, bollocks. But I assume she's not lying. She was saying that 80% of the people that she cast in it weren't represented actors. Now, that to me sounded crazy, which implies only 20% of them were. But, like, you know, and I know she's just done that new, like, Taken Down or whatever that new show is coming out on RTE. It's by Stuart Carlin as well.
Yeah,
but, like, it's interesting because, like, then sometimes you do see these amazing performances by people. And you're right, like, they don't have any, like, craft necessarily. But, I don't know, they might have this unbelievable charisma, or they're just a bit interesting. Like, it's, but that's kind of frustrating. Like, as two people who, say, gone and studied and who do, like, work on, like, the craft of it, do all this thing, it is kind of frustrating that someone could just come from left of field and kind of be better than you.
Yeah, but they're yeah, but that's the minority. Mm-hmm. That's the smallest percentage.
Totally agree.
That is like finding a diamond in the desert. Do you know what I mean? That, mm-hmm. It's not like, there are people that do that. There absolutely are. But you'll find that the vast majority are people who have absolutely grafted for years. And I can name loads of people that, you know, Liam Neeson didn't, you know, he was grafting for years. What's your man's name? Snape from Harry Potter. He was working in an office at 40, said, and you know what, I'm going to go do this. And, you know, there's loads of people that, you know, that had to graft for decades, you know, and I think that's where it is. And that's probably what gives me as well, going back to you were talking about self-belief or, you know, something like that. I'm a firm believer, is if you break your absolute nut off to make it happen, it'll happen. Like, you know, hard work pays off. If you just work and keep going and keep the head down and stay focused, it'll happen. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, you just got to you'll do it. And don't take no for an answer, you know, from the universe. I mean, not from anyone in particular. Just don't let the universe turn you down. You just keep playing ahead. Like,
do you ever think about, like, you know, I'm sure you've heard that story of, like, Jim Carrey, and he writes a check to himself.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing story. He did that speech in front of graduates in California College or something like that.
Right, yeah. And I agree with you. I actually think I have a very similar philosophy to you. So let me play devil's advocate here. Like, what if you just break your bollocks for the next 60 years and, like, you're consistently doing it? And, like, I'm sure we've all seen people, like, who are doing it for, like, a very, very long time with little to no, like, reward on any level. Not even, like, little microscopic things like getting auditions, getting an agent.
No, like, I understand. This thing eats people up. Like, it's completely, like, you're completely right. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being young and naive and living in a fantasy land. I'm sure there are people that will listen to this and go, bollocks, where's that button gone? Because there are people that do break their nut off for years and that nothing happens. But I don't, again, about going back to saying about feelings that just will get in the way and only hamper your efforts and your focus and your drive, those thoughts I just don't entertain. I don't, like, you know, and that's not to say, oh, I don't have moments of, like, self-doubt or, like, you know, self-deprecation, you know, or whatever the hell, like, but I just think that they're only there to distract and waste your time. They're not serving any positive purpose in getting you to any place except back.
Yeah, I love it. And so when those moments of self-doubt come, is it as simple as that for you, for saying, like, this is not a functional feeling, I'm getting rid of it? Or is there a process that you have to...
No, there's a process. No, it's not as instantaneous as that. I go through, but like every actor, or everyone in the arts, I feel like you always go through moments of self-doubt and self-deprecation where you think, oh, you're fucking shit. You are a waste of space. You suck. You can't do this. No, you can't fucking do this. You know? So, I just kind of, it does take you just got. I just have a discipline now to it, to be like, notice they're there, let them say and do what they want, and then they'll you know, it's kind of like the tide. It comes in, it'll go back out again. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I'm interested in that question, but from a producer point of view, because I think producers are one of the most mysterious people in any, like, even
enigmas.
I'm in like show business or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I still don't necessarily understand exactly what a producer does, especially at like the level, because you are working.
Neither do
bit.
I.
Yeah, well, fuck it. So what's a misconception about what you don't know what you're doing?
No. I don't know. But like, for me, producers, it's obviously it's all a collaborative thing, you know. Producers are there from the beginnings, so like you know, it's about finding the creative team, putting them together, you know, finding the piece, what do you want to say. It's about bringing those creatives together in a space to allow them to do the things they do best and to work together to create the thing. It's about organization, it's about getting the bums on seats, it's about PR, it's a bit about everything, do you know what I mean? But it's a facilitator of the thing for me. But it's a bit, you get to do a bit of everything. The reason I got into it is because I was when I was acting, I'd have ideas about like lights, and I'd have ideas about sound, and you know, all different elements, and I'd be like, you can only say and you can only offer so much when you're the actor in the room, you're in the rehearsal room, you're there to act and learn the scenes and get direction and you know focus on that. And I found, oh well, I'm good at organizing stuff and I'm in the game a bit, so why don't I just produce it, so I can it's another outlet for me to be able to kind of get into those, or to talk about those things. I'm no light designer and I'm no sound designer, but I do, like, I love being on the other side and being able to have a conversation with those people and be able to talk about those things, you know. What was the question?
No, that's it. No, I think it's interesting, like, even as someone who's within a thing, what like the misconceptions are from the outside of it. So I mean, I think like that one about acting, I mean, in particular, like it's true, because you hear that all the time.
I only heard it a couple of weeks ago from someone else. And I'm like, excuse me. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you just have to say like, oh, cool.
Cool, yeah,
good
great.
Luck with it, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
And
all the best, but like, don't. You know.
They'll find out.
They'll find out soon enough.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Number 42. Do you have it?
Ooh, 41. Oh, come on.
Number 42. The question is, if there was one thing you could change about Ireland, what would it be?
Oh, God. Here we go. I don't know. Nothing. Ireland's great.
You love it?
No. I don't know.
Do you like it as a place?
Yeah, no, I do love Ireland as a place. I love the people. As cliche as that is, like, that's quite a touristy thing to say. I love the Irish people. They're amazing. But no, I do. I love home. You know, I love Ireland. I love being at home. Whether I change something or not about it, Jesus, I don't even know.
Silence.
Yeah, no, look, I really don't know. We could get into all the social and political and everything that's gone on in the last 12 months and 18 months, but I just think there's an excellent movement happening in younger people and in the country, and you can see it in the referendums. It's really exciting to see things that have passed, like marriage equality and like the 8th and all that sort of stuff, and things are happening, do you know what I mean? Like, movement, things are moving in a interesting newer age direction. I watched this amazing documentary the other day. I can't remember what the economist's name was. It was on RTE, but it was about the state of the housing crisis and about like how the money has been getting stuck in with the older generation, and the younger generation is not filtering down to them. They're not feeling it. And none of the younger generation are. No matter if you're working in a solicitor's office, you know, 6 days a week, you're still struggling to get a mortgage or to find an appropriate house, which just beggars belief. So, but like, listen, we could waffle about this all day. I just think it's we're in an interesting time, and I think it'll be interesting when we're 40 or 50 or 60. What kind of an Ireland is it going to be then? I think it might be one of the hot properties on the planet, and in terms of the way the planet's going, like with the likes of America and Brazil just electing that Bolsonaro, the absolute lunatic, mm-hmm. and stuff that's happening, right wing stuff that's happening, you know, we can see trickles of it all over Europe. Ireland, you can see a little trickle of it happening with Peter Casey, but we can see the resounding voice for now and hopefully for the rest of time is no to that. And stuff in the Middle East, I think Ireland is going to be one of those neutral little pockets that hopefully, you know, this is dream stuff, but it does it looks like that to me. You know, there's a very progressive, forward thinking movement in the people here, which I find pretty good.
Do you think about leaving?
I do for temporarily, but not for the rest of my life. No, I'd love to live in London for a bit. I love it over there. I think it's great crack. I just don't think you could ever be bored. I know people who've lived there for 10 years and still don't know when I say, oh, do you know this place? And they go, no, I don't know where that is. So, you know, it's just, you know. So, yeah, I'd love to live there.
Is there anything like keeping you here for now or stopping you going?
Well, just work. Like, it's actually good. Work is good at the moment. And, you know, we're programmed. I'm busy up until the middle of December. And then we're into Christmas and New Year's. And then stuff at the company, you know, in the first 3 months next year. And figuring out, you know, what we want to do there for 2019. Have some stuff in the works for that. So it's like, it's, you know, just work. And there's stuff happening here. And
the iron is hot, shall we say.
Yeah. so it'd be a bit silly to be leaving, you know what I mean? Like, it's good. I'm happier at the moment.
Yeah, feeling it. All right, let's give it a spin.
Spin it.
Okay.
Do it. We have a rogue ball. Hang on. You have one in your hand.
I have one in my hand. I have one also that landed on my scarf. Nice. Number 54. Do you have it?
Yes. Let's keep these going. Right, we need to speed round this. We have 30 minutes left. My first number, 54.
Number 54. All right, the question is, who is your favourite actor?
Oh, God damn it. You're going to have to give me a second on that. Okay, so, Cillian Murphy, I suppose, has been one of my inspirations. I think his career trajectory and kind of, you know, him as a person and the way he shaped his career, I think is really interesting. I just think he's very impressive. You know, we watched a film a few months back called Sweetie Barrett, where he plays just this. It's with Brendan Gleeson, and he plays this barman in it. But he's like 22, 23, and he's just like... just this guy in the pub, like really unassuming, and then you watch stuff like Red Eye or like the Batman movies or something, and you just see like how far, what the trajectory, you know, you look at that and you know, yeah, he can act, like there's an actor there, but like the growth, and then straight into Peaky Blinders, I think what he's done with the character of Thomas Shelby is fucking amazing. That was a terrible Birmingham accent. I really need to work on that. I just think he's from an Irish actor's perspective, I think that he's pretty impressive. And I saw him in what's the crow
thing one? With
the
feathers?
Crow, Grief is the thing with feathers in the Black Box in Galway. Traveled down to see it, and I just thought it was hugely impressive as well. So, yeah, he'd be one. Also, in terms of, maybe an American one would be Robin Williams. Mm. I think Robin Williams was probably one of the most beautiful souls to ever grace the planet. Most tortured, but I just, I suppose because he's around and when you're in your formative years as a child and stuff, I became really attached to him. And like when he died, it was, you know, there was actually grieving there. And I think loads of people felt it because he just had this soul that was just like unlike any other, you know, person on screen, unlike any other person that's been beamed into our cinemas or beamed into our homes. There's no one else, and there probably will never be a person or a soul like his. He was just... operated on a different spectrum to the rest of the planet, and that was obviously his undoing as well. He just he was somewhere else. Like, he was not operating on where, you know, on the level we are all on. He's really inspirational to watch.
Do you believe that about people? I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I can't remember how it was framed, but and I remember we were talking about, say, like even in The Gate recently, like someone like Ruth Negga, and obviously getting to see, you know, an Oscar nominated actor, up on stage doing...
She was phenomenal as well. Like, doing inspirational stuff as well.
Incredible things. But like, we were having the conversation of like, are these people just people who are, you know, like right at the top of their game, they're doing whatever, or are they just playing a different game? Do you know what I mean? Like we were saying about Robin Williams, he's not living on our planet. Do you actually believe he's not, like, I don't mean literally not living on our planet, but that he
was born with something or born in, like, I watched documentaries about him and all the way through his early years and when he started doing comedy, his brain worked at a speed and a creative platform or level that was unlike anything else. That's what, he just has this shining, like he beams. Like if you ever watch him on screen, he just beams. Like I don't... There isn't anyone else like him. He's just, he puts a smile on my face. He could just be sitting there listening to someone speak and he makes me smile. He has this warmth and this energy, this aura that's like unlike anyone else. And I haven't seen it since. What was the question again?
I don't know. We're just talking about like that thing of like, is he like...
Are these people at the top of the game? Yeah. No, I think no, because it's all about the experiences they've had. They've built, they've experienced stuff and they've learned and they've made the mistakes, going back to the thing. They've just traveled the road a bit further along. I think Robert Williams is maybe a bit different because I just think like, but like, I think you can, going back to Cillian Murphy, you can see the journey, you can see the road he's traveled, you can see the graft he's put in, you can see the knowledge he's obtained by securing those jobs and being on those sets and being on those stages and working with those directors and, you know, those people. You learn, you know yourself from doing it. You learn every time you do a job, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Or you take something from working with a co-actor, you know, you're looking at them, what they're doing and how they're breathing, you know, how they're taking in the thing or how they're, you know, you learn a huge amount from the road traveled on. I think there's obviously the particular people, but it's more, I think, again, going back to the majority, it's about the road that's been traveled, I suppose.
The day Robin Williams died, I was like about like unbelievably close to his house. I was in California at the time, and like we were on the island because we did the like whole boat trip over to, like, I think it was Sausalito was the island where his house was, and like I remember so clearly, like it was like a 9/11
probably
moment.
A morning, yeah, everyone in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, it was unbelievable. Like I remember it so clearly, like as the news was filtering out. Yeah, it was probably afternoon. I think they found him in the morning, and like it was like a 9/11 moment.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah. No, he was. He's left a gaping hole and still does. Like there's no one like him. I suppose Jim Carrey as well. Again, slightly a different iteration, but like absolutely off the wall character, wacko kind of maniac genius kind of person, you know.
Yeah, what kind of act? It's interesting the names that you're like saying. What kind of act? Like, do you look at? Do you?
I don't think I'm anything like these people at all. I'm actually the other end of the spectrum, but that's why I admire them so much, because I think there's something genius about that, and that I will never be, and I don't think I'm not even aiming to be. That's something on the other end of the spectrum in terms of what I'm trying to achieve with my end of things.
And what's your end of things?
I'd be more on it's more serious, like dramatic, or like that's more the thing that I'd love to get into, like Peaky Blinders or something like dramatic and kind of like the work that Cillian Murphy does. I think he's a very good, you know, and that's, again, I'm not comparing myself.
No, I know you're not Murphy.
But but that kind of thing, rather than the off the wall character, comedic genius, you know, improvisational stuff that Jim Carrey does, like Liar Liar. You know, a lot of that is off the cuff in scenes, like coming up with, you know, that's genius. And that's why I guess when you ask me who's your favorite, who do you admire, who do you, you know, that kind of stuff is like the thing that I go,
yeah,
wow, that's pretty insanely cool. Like, you know.
Right, let's go spin.
Spin it.
All right, here we go. Number 52. Do you have it?
No.
No worries.
No. Okay.
Number 52. What is one thing you wish you could change about yourself?
Oh, God. Who writes these? Is it you? You're a sick, sick man.
That is a terrible question.
That is,
I don't
awful.
Know if I ever asked that question before.
One thing I could change about myself. God, these are the kind of questions you need like 10 minutes to really reflect on.
Like, is there anything? Because like I was thinking with this today, like those people who like don't regret anything. Like, do you know those people who are like, well, no regrets, and like they really fucking mean, well, like they say, they pretend they mean it if they don't. Like, it's real interesting. Like, there are definitely things I would change about myself. Like, I'm very happy with myself.
Okay, let's flip the question around on you, because you might give me some inspiration now to be able to be like, okay, yeah, okay. So what would you change? One aspect.
I have a really big rib cage. I'd love a smaller.
Oh, are you talking
cage.
Physical?
No, I'm okay. Talking anything you want. Anything. Like, it could also be like, I've also got quite an addictive personality. Like, yeah. I wish I didn't have that. Like, there's loads of things, but I'm very happy with who I am fundamentally. Like, I think I'm a good, yeah. kind, nice person most of the time, which is probably most important.
Yeah.
But there are loads of things I could. I wish it was a bit more flexible. I can't touch my toes, which kind of annoys me. Like emotionally, yeah.
I guess I get stressed. Right. Like, I get stressed and I worry. That's one thing I like. The lady friend, shall we say, is very good at not kind of like she's not Tony's done. She's not a worrier. She's the other side of the spectrum. She's everything will be cool. Everything's yeah. fine. Everything's grand. And I'm like, oh God, there's so much. I have there's lots on. And Jesus, and I worry. And I stress. So that's one thing I'd probably change is my attitude towards that, and how could I like ride the wave a bit more, like it's all cool, you know.
And if you weren't like that, do you think that would like improve, would that make, because
it might be to the detriment, because I get a lot of stuff done then, do you know what I mean, because I'm like very proactive, I'm very productive with that, if you get me. It doesn't hamper my efforts, it just doesn't make it the most comfortable ride, if you know what I mean. Like, it could be a smoother way of doing things, basically.
And I don't want to go back to the old adage, opposites attract, but in terms of, like, your relationship, do you think you balance each other out well in that
Hugely.
Way?
Hugely. She is literally the opposite end, yeah.
So I wonder completely. What would happen to you if you were like her in that way. Like, would it
I
work?
I don't think it would work, no. Isn't it? Because yeah. There's a balance there, like, you know. I don't think, yeah, no, it's because that, yeah, opposites do attract. And that's the yin and the yang, the yin and the yang. The yin and the yang. Yeah, that's what that thing is, you know.
Have you been in relationships before where you were with other, like, kind of hyper-stressed people and it was, like,
yeah.
more toxic?
Yeah,
or,
yeah, yeah.
And what was that experience like in comparison to this?
Like that, more toxic.
It was.
It didn't work. It didn't last. It, like, didn't end up working, you know. Mm.
It's so yeah. funny how, like, you kind of just need to find, like, whatever your, like, functions and dysfunctions are and kind of match them up with someone else.
Yeah, with someone who's like, yeah, who that balances all that stuff.
It's
out,
really
but that's,
fucking hard to...
It's really hard to find.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is. So, I'll be holding on to that one for a long time.
Yeah, dead right.
Thank God.
Yeah, yeah, lovely. Right, let's give it a spin.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Number 35. Do you have it?
35? No, I don't.
How do you feel about being the age you currently are?
Pretty content, to be honest. I would not want to go back for love nor money. And going forward seems scarier. You know, or, you know. No, I'm pretty comfortable with the age I'm at.
What age are you? Do you mind? 27.
Yeah.
And so what was, like, you say you don't want to go back. How far are we talking? Like, obviously teenage.
Oh, to, like, school or yeah. to, like, I was in UCD, to college, to going to lectures, to being uncomfortable in shifting from the world of schools, the world of university. Then going to study acting training full-time, conservatory training, 8 in the morning till 8 in the evening, sometimes 10 or half 10, 11 before you get home. After seeing a show, all that experience is great, and I wouldn't change any of it. But I wouldn't want to live through any of that ever again. it's growing up is tough. Doing all that stuff is tough. It's like now you're actually into the real thing, which is like doing the thing yeah. rather than, you know, it's been education up until 3 years ago. Do you know? Mm. So I think that, you know, since over the last 3 years, things have crested, and things have always, thankfully, touch wood, and they continue, have been on the kind of up or not, or have been improving and not kind of stagnant or declining, or, you know. So I think going forward, it's not like that, you know, scary thing, if you get me. But going back would be like, oh God. No. You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What do you think the experience of having done, I didn't actually know you went to UCD and did that whole other thing before
yeah,
the conservatory
side. I did,
training.
And that's what made the conservatory training so difficult. Jesus.
Yeah, so talk about that. What was it specifically?
So you go from school where you're treated like a child yeah. and you have to wear your pants a certain way and be somewhere at a certain time, and I was never really good with authority. I probably still am, to be honest. And then you go to university and you're like, you can do whatever you want. You can be whoever you want. You can be wherever you want, whenever you want. You can do whatever work you choose to do. If you don't choose to do it, that's on you. You have no one keeping tabs, no one telling you how to do it. And that's great, and it's liberating, and you get, having been in the other system for the best part of 90% of your life, you finally get thrown off that, and you're like, wow, I'm an adult. This is great. And then you go into conservatory acting training and you're treated like a baby again. You're like back to, you know, how to breathe, how to stand, where to be, when to be. You're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, you know, and it's just like getting slapped back into. So that's what made conservatory acting, my first year was really uncomfortable, like really hard to readjust. And, you know, my just automatic reaction was to, excuse me, to kind of fight against that, I suppose, because I just don't like authority, and having been given a taste of, you know, autonomy over myself and independence, to go back into that was pretty difficult.
And then, like, so in terms of, you said the idea of going forward, like, then obviously there's like a degree of fear there. Like, what's that about?
Yeah, because of the unknown. Like, you know what's happened, you don't know what's coming.
Sure.
Yeah, which is exciting because it could be absolutely fantastic. But then again, it could be absolutely horrific. So that's, yeah, it's just.
Do you think about your life in that way? Like, do you have an image of what it looks like in 5 years, 15 years, that kind of thing?
I suppose like the Jim Carrey thing, to sign a check and, you know, visualize. He's a big believer in visualization, and, you know, but no, I try not to think about it. I'm very much living in the present moment, living like focusing on the immediate rather than thinking about 10 years. I suppose that's the acting, maybe it's the acting training, or maybe it's just me, is about being living in the present and being as present as possible at all times. I don't usually think too far in advance. I'm not very good at it. Maybe, you know, a 12 months would be maybe 12, 18 months would be the absolute most I'd be kind of thinking about down the track. But then thereafter, like, it's free for all. Whatever happens, happens. I think if you focus on those 12 months, 18 months, you know, then the rest will kind of, you know, it'll, you know, again, you'll get lost thinking about, oh, what's going to happen in 5-10 years? It's like, well, you know, what's happening now? What do you need to deal with right now? You know,
sure.
That'll get you to 5-10 years. If you're thinking about 5-10 years, what's going to, you know, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to get you there.
Yeah.
Bollocks.
Yep. All right, here we go. Number 21. Do you have it?
No, 29. This is not a good ball machine, Tom. What have you done with these balls?
Well, do you know, the next question was going to be, what would an appropriate title for your autobiography be? And what have you done with these balls is not bad.
What have you done with my balls? Was that number 29, by the way?
21.
Ah, jeez.
Right, let's just give it a
come on.
We'll find an autobiography title for you.
By the end.
By the end, we'll find one. All right, number 45. Do you have it?
No, 41.
Damn. Okay. With the benefit of hindsight, was there a catalyst moment that made you pursue acting?
So I'd been acting as a kid. I went to like acting class the weekend, like from the age of 7. I was doing like all sorts of sports, like I was doing every sport under the sun as a kid and growing up. Yeah. But like never really that excelled in any of them. I was average at best in across the board, which is great because that actually helps with the acting thing. If you can swim a bit, if you can kick a ball a bit, if you can swing a golf club a bit, if you can shoot a basketball into a hoop a bit and bounce a ball, you know, that all helps, you know, doing middling of the road and all that stuff. But so my parents enrolled me in acting classes, and kind of what started off at 7 or 8 in ITW, Independent Theatre Workshop, plug, it became like acting, dance, musical theatre, speech, drama, so a whole plethora of classes, and I ended up going from school Monday to Friday from, you know, 8 until 4 to then at the weekends literally living out of another school, which was the drama school, all day Saturday and a half day on Sunday. Which is great. So, and then I went to UCD and I did geography and economics, and that was kind of the sensible thing to do, you know, go and get a degree. That's one thing I would change about Ireland, is the absolute psychological oppression that we put on our kids and people leave in school, that you have to go to college. It's like, it's these steps, like it's like this recipe for success, is go to an academic school, go excel in your academic school, go and get your CAO, go to a university and learn third level. We're awash with third level. I think we have the highest amount of third level graduates per capita in Europe, if not in the West. Like it's insane. So anyway, I went down that path, did it, and once I finished it, I was like, what am I doing? like the only thing that got me up in the morning. And all the way through it, I did like a couple of feature films and I did like advertisements, and I DJed on my way all through college. I didn't really go to lectures. But one thing that get me up in the morning before 5 a.m. would be a pickup to go to set. Like, no bother. I'd jump out of bed for that. But if I had an alarm waking me up at 9:30 to be in a lecture for 11, good luck. There's no, like, I'd just hit the snooze button. I wouldn't do it. So once I finished college, I realized, well, you know, what am I doing here?
What were you doing there? What was the thing that brought you there? Was it parents?
Yeah, it was the school. It was like, you know, I remember sitting down and, you know, my school was great. I really loved my school, but there was no facilities for, I want to do acting. Look, this is Trinity here and DIT, and they're good courses, and you know, like, you know, there's some academics, you could do film and English, what about that? Or like, you know, well, you could study English and then, you know, or, you know, it was all like, no, I want to learn how to act. Like, there's no facilities for it, basically. So it was a combination of a lot of external factors that kind of, and I feel that's what, there's no one getting pushed into anything to do trade with your hands or with trade, or, you know, it's all to do with academics and intellectual. And yeah, we have, you know, this big, huge brain burst society. It's all about academics and computers and IT, but we're going to fall short on people like carpenters and electricians, and, well, maybe we won't need them because they'll all be done by robots. Some robot will show up at your house and fix your jacks, or a mechanical robot will fix your car. But like, there's no one doing mechanics anymore. There's no one doing electric. There's a huge, like, there's no one doing that stuff anymore. It's all medicine or, you know, engineering or arts or, you know, sciences or, you know, all that stuff. And that's well and good. But like, what about all the, like, the arts, like, or any of the other stuff that's happening, mm-hmm. You know? Anyway, rant over.
I was interested in you talking about being like kind of like middle of the road for a lot of the sport and things. What's your relationship to sports now? Any interest still?
No, I'd watch the rugby a bit, but and the UFC, so whenever that's on. Sometimes just when Conor was fighting, or, you know, golf sometimes a little bit, not really. I'd watch the rugby mainly when that's on, yeah. Like Guinness or the Heineken Cup, or, you know, that thing.
Right, sweet. Let's give it a spin.
Do it.
All right, here we go. Number 26.
No, 29. No,
number 26. The question is, what is your most treasured relationship with someone over the age of 65?
My most treasured relationship with someone over the age of 65? Wow. My granny just turned 90 last week, or 2 weeks ago, yeah. So there we go. That might be one. She's getting on. Not really. She's actually awful. Yeah, no, she's but I don't know, someone over 65. I don't really have many mates over 65.
Right.
I don't. Like, yeah, yeah, no, I wouldn't. But not many treasured relationships anyway.
Yeah, I do have a few. Maybe that's where the question is there. Maybe it's a bit of like, you know,
it's a Tom Moran question.
I wish someone asked me that. That's probably what all these questions are, really, on some level. But like, it is kind of interesting.
I'd love to see you do a personality bingo with yourself. Hi, I'm Tom Moran, and this is personality bingo, and I'm with Tom Moran.
Tom Moran plays themselves.
spin the basket there, Tom. Oh, thank you, Tom. this is literally why you came up with this thing, isn't it?
It'd be a very polite episode.
Yeah.
yeah, you should get some friends over 65.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, if I'm gonna give you some. But great crack. Well, no, they're just good. Although, like, I do
they're
this.
Great crack.
I just do have this awareness that, like I do have like friends over the age of 65. Like, just from, like, I don't know, I had like a childminder when I was younger and stuff, and like, she's amazing. But like, you also have this awareness. Like, it's like all my grandmother died about 3 months ago, right? So they're all dead now. Like, all my, so like, it's like they, I don't know. It's just like that next wave of like. Because it's a big generation gap if you go from, like, my granny who just passed away was 91, and then, you know, it's your parents who
30
are
30-something
like,
years behind that.
Do you know? So it's, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big gap of, like, experience, maybe. That's what I like. Maybe that's what I like about it, but...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Mm. Right, we give it another spin?
Yeah, spin it.
All right, here we go. Number...
Do it.
30. Do you have it?
Nope.
No worries. Number 30.
Not going to do this, guys. I'm not going to be able to ask Tom my question.
Oh, shit.
No, go on.
What is your worst habit?
My worst habit, I bite my nails, and that's such a like stereotypical, or not stereotypical, but cliched habit. But yeah, I bite my nails a lot.
Do you ever use the terrible paint?
No, I did. Actually, when I was a teenager, or when I was younger, my mum tried to do that to me. Mm. When I was like 10 or 12 or something, and that tastes like arse. That's really, it's it tastes like nail varnish remover almost. That's what it tastes like. It tastes like that. Mm-hmm. It's gack. No, I don't know. My worst habit's probably that.
Is there a time when you do? Is it like a nervous thing or an anxious thing?
No, yeah, just yeah. Sometimes yeah, I just do yeah. Just do it, like
yeah.
I haven't done it now, but I will right now, folks.
Yeah. I know. I was terrible when I was younger for sucking my thumb, and like just shamelessly, I didn't even mind the fact that I did it. Like I did it till I was 13, and yeah. Like then my mum was like, "I was like obviously starting secondary school, and whatever," and she's like, "You can't do that. That's like a thing you'll get bullied about or something." And I was like, "I don't care. I'm willing to die in this hill. Like, yeah. I fucking love it."
I have a really bad habit. Whenever I go on like if flights on an airplane, I do this thing where I wait for like the fasten seatbelt sign to go off and I get up and I walk down the aisle and I crop dust the entire aisle.
You what?
I crop dust.
Crop dust?
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Have you ever heard of crop dusting? No. It's my new favourite saying. Have you never heard of crop dusting?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Crop dusting is where someone gets up and walks down the entire aisle while farting all the way along the aisle. So you crop dust the plane. I heard that the other day. It's my new favourite thing. A crop duster. A serial crop duster.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry, folks. That's gotten a bit loose there. We'll get back to the questions.
I wish I could say bollocks. I wish. All right. Here we go. Number 25.
Have we not had that already?
No.
29.
Number 25. Okay. The question is, tell us something about yourself that when people hear it, they are surprised.
Oh, man. I suppose when I tell people I'm an actor, or people ask me what I do, and I'm like an actor, I'm a producer, and they go, "What?" I was like, "Yeah." Like, people are really surprised by that a lot of the times.
What do you think, if you weren't doing that, like, what do you think people, like, what do you think your casting type is in, like, a profession?
In a profession?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You could be a young guard.
Could I?
I think so, yeah.
You heard it first, Maureen, cast me and take a date, well done.
Or, like, something financial, financially, I think.
Financial. Yeah, I could be. I could see myself in a suit, like in a bank or
working
something.
Working in Davies
awful.
Or something like that.
No, but if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably love to be in like event management or something like that, working on like organizing like music gigs or like I used to do that when I was in school. We had this mini company. We did this thing called Blast Beat, which is where they go into schools and you set up a mini company and you organise a battle of the bands, and they're kind of all linked amongst the different companies in the school. You do it in transition year. Mm. And anyway, we flew over to the UK. There was a group of us that the people in the head office really liked, and we flew over to the UK to do like the Blast Beat UK finals. And ever since then, I was like, Jesus, this whole being involved in music gig stuff is a load of crack. So I'd love to get, if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably be doing event management or something along the lines of.
Were you ever in a band, or do you sing?
Yeah,
or?
I played drums for years. I played in two bands, the drums in two bands. Played a bit of guitar as well. Still play a bit of guitar, but like not well. Like, yeah. Strum a song.
Are you
a
singer?
Oh, yeah, I can sing a bit. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Not as great as I could. You know, I used to do singing lessons, but once you stop flexing the muscle, it kind of goes a bit to shit. Mm. But yeah, no, I can hum a tune.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, let's give it a spin.
Yeah.
Let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. Number 16. Do you have it?
Nope.
No worries. Number 16. The question is, what are your memories of 9/11?
Oh God! I remember being in school and I remember coming out of school, like coming out the front door, and my teacher crossing the car park with this really worried look on her face, and like she was just like flustered as hell, and she shouted over to one of the other teachers, the towers after being hit, and I was like, what the hell, and I was like, that's bizarre. Anyway, I cycled home and I got in. My mum was sitting like with her mouth on the floor in the front room with the TV on, and I came in. I was like, what the hell's going on? She didn't answer me. I looked at the TV and they were playing footage of the plane going into the tower. And I'll just never forget. I literally felt like the world stopped and I was just standing still there for an hour, and we were just sitting there saying nothing to each other, just looking at the screen, watching people jumping out of the buildings, and it was just really surreal. It felt like a dream. It felt like really bizarre. But yeah, that was kind of the timeline. I don't think you'll ever forget that kind of a timeline, of something like that. It's one of the rare events in humanity that you'll always kind of remember. That's a good question. Where were you when that happened?
Yeah,
yeah. You'll always know. You'll always remember that. Like, that was insane stuff.
Yeah, and it's mad because how young we were, and you still know.
Yeah, I was like 10. When was that? 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like 10.
It would have been, yeah.
I was like 10, yeah. But I'd still have vivid memories of my TV and of the screen and the room and everything. But yeah, it was bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah, scary.
Scary stuff.
All right, here we go. Number 53. Do you have it?
No.
No worries. Number 53. The question is, what is the greatest piece of art you've ever witnessed?
Oh, God.
Anything. Theatre, films,
I don't know, man. That's really hard. I'm so bad at picking, like, if someone goes, tell me your favourite film, go. I'm like, I have no idea. I like so much. I don't know. That's one of the hardest. I hate when people ask me that. Like, what's your favorite piece of theater? What's your favorite company? What's your favorite drink? I don't know. I have no favorites. I like.
What kind of an audience member are you? When you go to see theater as like an actor and a producer, do you find you're extra critical, or are you kind of like appreciate the effort?
No,
that's
I'm
gone
appreciating.
In?
I'm more of an appreciator rather than a critical kind of person. I don't sit there and kind of sit in the high horse and be like, oh, they've done that so awfully, how terrible. No, I more appreciate trying to find the good things in it, and the things that didn't go so well. And you learn from going to see all that stuff as well. But yeah, I honestly do not have an answer for the best piece of art I've seen.
Yeah.
Right,
let's give it a
spin. Let's spin it because I have 3 minutes left.
All right, number 58. Do you have it?
Nope.
No worries. Number 58, the question is, in terms of artistic creation, what drives you to do what you do?
Artistic creation? How do you mean?
Well, like, why do you think you're fundamentally an actor?
Because it can't be anything else. I don't know.
Like, for me, I love the idea, and even with this podcast, it's the same or any piece of writing I do or acting, whatever it might be. I love the idea that, like, someone witnessing it might feel a little less lonely. I like that idea. That, like, you know, one of your answers they might feel is a bit, like, if they were to say it, is a bit weird, and then you give the same weird answer or whatever. Like,
it's
like,
I guess it's connection, really.
Yeah.
It's about connection to the self, connection to other people. It's about telling stories, about storytelling. But mostly for me, I think it's about connection, about connecting with other people. On a different level, that's just fleeting, like everyday, like kind of coffee talk, you know, to really dig into someone or another person, like when you're doing a scene or, you know, working on a character. Or I find that probably the most interesting, to try and step into someone's shoes in a scene with someone else, and to feel all those things that are nothing to do with you, but you're feeling, you know, I feel a lot. that sounds weird, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's I guess it's just to be able to connect.
When you say you feel a lot, do you consider yourself like an emotional person?
Yeah, I absolutely would.
Wonder what that is about.
Like, sensorially, like in my chest, in my stomach, I feel a lot. In my head, you know. Yeah,
that is interesting when you feel things in your like chest or in your tummy or whatever the thing is. Like, do you associate those with like certain feelings? Like for me, like if like when I'm feeling at my very very worst, I really feel it like in my gut, like in my stomach.
Yeah, Helena Walsh trained us in the Gaiety School, and she did a lot of sensory work. So instead of thinking about emotions like joy or grief or excitement or anger or frustration or any variations on the spectrum, instead of thinking them as think of them as a feeling, where do you feel it actually in your body? And I guess that's definitely driven into my everyday life. Do you know what I mean? When I feel stressed or when I feel, you know, it also helps me to deal with it because I can notice where it is, you know, accept that, breathe it in, breathe it out, let it go, and let it, you know. Yeah, it's good work, good help for every, you know, every day, not just acting.
Yeah. All right, sweet. Probably got time for two more.
Okay, here we go.
All right, here we go. Number 46.
No.
You don't have that one. Number 46, the question is, do you believe in an afterlife?
Oh, we talked about this earlier. I don't believe in anything man-made afterlife. I do not believe in any religions that are man-made. I actually don't like religion as a device. I think for the most part it's been quite toxic over history. And it's not, you know, not it's led to more negative than, you know. For me personally, I just don't believe in religion. But I do believe that we are so, going back to the infinitesimally small thing, and we can only understand so much given the size of our actual understanding machines in between our ears, where they're so infinitesimally small in the grander scheme of things, that how could we possibly understand beyond what we can see in this room, you know, in the sky, or like we couldn't possibly understand. Like to even think about the scale of some things that we can see would boggle our brains. Do you know what I mean? So I always like to think that there is something afterwards, that it's not just a forever blackness. You know, that it's not going to be a cloudy kind of cotton candy place where we all meet up with all our lost loved ones and sing and dance and hold hands. But I like to think there is something, the part of you that makes you maybe goes into something else. Maybe, I don't know, recreation or anything like that. But like, I like to think that it's not just an empty black void. Or maybe it is. Maybe it just ceased to exist and that's it. But definitely not afterlife, heaven, you know, yeah. as it man-made manifests itself, if you get me.
I get you. All right, let's give it one last spin.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
This is how we do it.
Number 51.
No.
No.
All
right.
We only got one number, lads. Is that normal? Is that, no, that's terrible, isn't
it? No, it's, well, people have got none before, so you're not.
Okay, well,
yeah, you're okay. Not the very best.
We need to limit these balls. I think you should do like 50 balls, maybe.
All right, can you know what? Get your own fucking podcast.
Hello, welcome to Killian's Calls. Killian Calls? Killian Coyle's 50 ball basket twirly personality game.
Bollocks.
Game. Bollocks. Bollocks. Yeah, it'll have a bollocks button, that's for sure. I bloody well need one.
Yeah. No, that waiver you signed at the start, that means the bollocks button is now ours.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Shit.
All right, number 51, last question. What's the worst date you've ever been on?
No.
You definitely have one in
no,
mind.
No. I don't actually, but can I pawn this off on someone else?
Sure, please.
I heard this. We were at a Halloween party the other day, and hopefully he's not listening. Well, I won't name who he is, but one of the lads was saying he went out on this Tinder date, and he was in his suit. He works in a bank. He was in a suit after work or whatever, and she came. And she sat down and he just slowly began to realize talking to her that she was the complete opposite of him. Like, she was into yoga and into like meditation, and he's just kind of like this lad from South County Dublin, works in a bank, kind of a bit straight edge. So he ordered one drink, or he ordered around, and they were chatting, and they finished that drink fairly quickly, like after, you know, 5-10 minutes. They ordered another drink, and then, you know, just there was kind of a lull in conversation. She just goes, yeah, no, this isn't going to work. And she just stood up and walked away.
Wow.
Literally just stood up, and that was it. She didn't even say goodbye, thank you. She said, yeah, no, this isn't going to work. And she stood up and walked away.
Kind of better.
Well, in fairness, it is Tinder, so fair play to her. She, you know, don't waste more time than's necessary. But I just thought it was just, I'm visualizing that is just, that would wreck me. That would be horrible.
Oh.
I felt so bad for him as well, because he was so cut up about it, and was like, oh, you poor bastard.
Oh, was he?
No, well, he wasn't like in bits about it, but you could just tell that he was like, yeah, well, of course you would be. Like,
you said about them being so opposite. So, like, rather than going through like an awkward, like weird, like, oh, will we kiss goodnight?
Yeah,
or
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know, like, some weird, like, or whatever the fuck it was going to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, just cut it right.
But he was
there.
He liked her as well. He still thought she was nice and, like, yeah. But it was after the fact. Like, obviously, he didn't go, oh, shit, we're opposite or whatever. In it, he was like, oh, yeah, so blah, 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 talking away. And she just eventually went, yeah, no, this is gonna look them up and down. Yeah, no, this is gonna work.
Unless, but you do know, you do know that quickly. Sometimes you're just
in fairness,
totally wrong.
Yeah,
this is.
I've heard of people like literally their date has come up to me and said, "Are you Tom?" And you go, "Yeah." Oh, and walked away like. Yeah. Well, first glance,
I've had like I wouldn't quite call it being like catfished, but like being misled, I suppose, and like it's a real shitty thing to do to someone. Like, you should never do that to someone, fundamentally, like, especially on those kind of like dating sites. Like, the whole contract is like a degree of honesty that like you're gonna do what you say you do in your bio, and you're gonna look like you say you look like in your pictures, because it's so fundamentally superficial that y'all have to sign up for a contract of superficiality or the whole thing falls to fuck. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So poor fella. Well, we'll dedicate that episode to Mr. Banker.
Mr. Banker.
South County Dublin
Banker. Yeah, he's a nice boy.
Yeah, man. Kareer, thanks so much for doing this. Will you do me a favour? Tell me about all the things coming up for you and the acting and producing end.
Absolutely. So I am currently producing the new theatre Artist in Residence, the wonderful Kira Smith's final production, or main production, for Artist in Residency. It's called We Can't Have Monkeys in the House. It's a new absurd comedy. It's absolutely hilarious. It was written for Aisling O'Mara, Daniel Galligan, Camille Lucy Ross, and Meg Healy. Keely, all the four of them, the best girdles in the world. And they're all in it, and they're absolutely amazing. And it's just an off-the-walls, bonkers piece about four sisters that have to come back together because their mammy's she's dying and she's on her deathbed. But it is, and that sounds really grim, but it's actually really hilarious because one of them's estranged and they're all absolutely off the walls and hilarity ensues. And there's an unbelievable team working on it. It's all of the Rough Magic Seeds. Kira's a Rough Magic Seed, and the rest of them, John Gunning, Naomi Faulkner, Leah Denny Kiarval, and did I say Naomi? Yeah, I said Naomi. And Kira, and oh my God, my brain. All the best people. I'm so sorry. Why can't I think of the team? It's there. Me and then, yeah. But they're all absolutely insane and incredible at what they do. And they're all working on it. So it's going to be a really exciting project. It's on from the 12th to the 24th of November from 7:30. And tickets are 13 or 15 euro.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, look, I'm going to be there. I'm sure a ton of our listeners will, because Kira's doing the show.
All Honey was absolute class. And all the team, if you look at the work they've done, like they're absolutely incredible. Olivia Songer is directing. That's the one person I forgot. Come on, Olivia. I'm so sorry. My brain. We've had a lot of questions here, Olivia. Tom's rattled my brain. But Olivia as well, she's a Rough Magic Seed, and she's incredible, and she is directing the piece. And also Pamela McQueen is a dramaturg. Final piece of the puzzle. And that is everyone. It's a team of 11. It's actually kind of, it's quite a lot to, a lot of names. It's a huge team, but it's an incredible, incredible team. Come on down.
Excellent. All right, Killian Coyle, thanks for playing Personality Bingo.
No worries. And if you made it this far, thank you so much. Fair play to you. Like, that's an absolute, you're legends. And thank you for listening to me laugh silly for
bollocks.
Bollocks.
So, guys, that was the superfluous Killian Coyle playing Personality Bingo. Killian, if you are listening, a massive thank you to you for taking the time to do it and for inventing the bollocks button. I mean, that was kind of special in and of itself. Also, a huge thank you to, as I said, the phenomenal Erin Lindsay for mixing, editing and producing the podcast. Also, a huge thank you to Alan Bennett and Paddy O'Leary for having us aboard the network, to Leah Moore and Anthony Manley for their beautiful theme music, and to the ever excellent Connor Nolan for our delicious artwork. If you could taste it, it would taste like banana and pear. Is that even a flavour? If it was, it was delicious. What else do we need to say? Yeah, go and check out Killian and Kira and all the gang's play. It's in the new theatre. We Can't Have Monkeys in the House. It's going to be deadly. It's kicking off on the 12th or 13th. I think it's the 12th. Let's go with the 12th of November, and if it's not the 12th, it's the 13th, and it's running until the 24th. And I know that for shoresies, and I'm gonna go and see it. I urge you to do the same, guys. Other than that, please tune in next week as we're real close to episode 100 now. I don't know, we're on like about 96 or 7, I think. So it's getting real close. Gonna try organize something real amazing for episode 100 if I can at all. And thanks for being a part of the journey thus far. If you're new to us, welcome aboard. Hit subscribe, give us a rating, do all that stuff that you know to do for podcasts. They do really make a difference, especially for little baby podcasts like mine. And thank you so much for your support. Tune in next week when the effervescent Justine Stafford plays Personality Bingo with Tom Moran.